choosing your names. Then is Honorable Gumede. And then Sazerite. Okay, let's hear the Deputy Minister first. The Deputy Minister.
I thought you were ignoring me, Chair, and thought that because I walked out early, I was being punished. No, thank you very much, and I do apologize once again. I was called away to the NCOP Select Committee in the middle of the presentation, I think, by Jan. But I just have I have some comments as well, but I think I'll just restrict myself to some questions at this stage, Chairperson. My starting point with regard to the aspirations, particularly on free movement, that 2018 is earmarked for visa-free travel for all Africans. My question is, how do we know who is an African if you don't have wall-to-wall civil registration in countries? Where in some countries on the continent, single mothers are unable to pass their citizenship onto their children. And should we not consider very deeply who free movement would actually benefit if we don't start there? At the point of acquisition of citizenship. The second question I have is, are we talking about free movement or are we talking about facilitated movement? Because if it's free movement, it can't then benefit only Africans. It will benefit everybody. And so for me, it seems to me that, and the issue was raised, I think, in the first presentation around the time it takes at borders and so on. So the issue is really, do we need to fix our administrations, our systems, and enable easier flow of people? And I think really, for me, that's quite a critical issue when we talk about free movement. You know, there's this postulation that says before colonialism, there were no borders in Africa. And I just wanted to understand that contention. Because in biblical times, I know that you had kingdoms. I know for a fact that certainly in the Islamic theology, which we regard as authentic history, 1,500 years ago, some of the earliest Muslims came to Africa to seek refuge as refugees, and they were given refuge in Abyssinia. And so they were kingdoms, and they were definitely borders, because you knew where the one kingdom started and the other one ended. So I just wanted to know, and the only reason I'm raising this is because I do think that there's this preoccupation was saying no borders because the colonialists came and imposed it. But the very origin of borders relates to security, which is what some of the presenters spoke to. Finally, I just want to ask, related to this question of free movement is also in the protocol. You will see that there is some notion that we have parity between how you treat your citizens and how you treat migrants. And I don't know whether there is any other country except South Africa that has a social security. We have a mixed economy in this country, and so you have a semblance of a social security net, safety net, when it comes to free healthcare, free education, and to some extent even housing for persons who are not necessarily citizens but certain categories, so for example refugees and permanent residents. Now, are there any other countries on the continent that offer these services to their citizens? Thank you very much.
Honorable Dambuzi.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. And I also wish to thank the presentations from the presenters, all of them. They were very much informative and empowering. Chairperson, I think there is no dispute about the aspirations of the 2063 agenda. No dispute about them, but there is a challenge. The time frames that have been put, more especially the first term, which is a 10-year. Because we all know that the African countries have got a problem of infrastructure. And I wouldn't believe that that resolution would make it practical to achieve some of those tasks that have been proposed. Yes, in terms of the visas for African states, that passport, African passport, I think that one could be very much easy. But when it comes to the rest, we all know that most of the countries, African countries, do not have even the population register in their countries. So it's a task on its own, the issue of a population register. And the issue of capacity is also a challenge, Chairperson. And when I was listening and I was reading through the documents, there was a task that was given the states to assess, the task team that was tasked to assess the capacity of the countries. And I have not seen the report. I don't know what is the outcome of that assessment so that they can develop the plans to enhance, to develop skills and the capacity and enhance the capacity. Coming to South Africa, Chair, I think in terms of infrastructure, the budgetary constraints, I don't know if have they been considered, because it's one of the issues that has to be considered. I'm not saying the program should not be implemented, but the time frames, because if you understand, for instance, in a South African situation, we plan for an MTF period. So I think those issues should be considered. The issue of control versus governance, I don't know how maybe the word control is the word that is the problem. But we have to manage the borders, because each country has got the right to maintain its sovereignty. At the end of the day, you cannot have a state that is open, just opened, but need to ensure that the sovereignty of the state is protected and maintained. Now, when you relate to control, maybe we can use management, I don't know, because as South Africa, we have developed the border management, the act that we have passed recently. I think that Border Management Act. So I think we don't have to be so hard on South Africa. Let's look at other countries, and we need to appreciate what South Africa has done in terms of trying to ensure that, to consider the issues that are in this agenda. Because if now we are trying to push South Africa, and then there are other countries that are left, and we need to ensure that at least we maintain pace, we maintain our pace, and exact, so that we also encourage other countries. We don't have to run an extra mile, and then we say other people will follow us. Let's take a step, one step. And then we see if other countries are able to do what we are doing, and then take another two steps. But if we are pushing South Africa so much, this is very much unfair to South Africa, in my opinion, Chairperson. That is very, very much unfair. I think we need to appreciate what is happening in South Africa currently, more especially in terms of security. The issue of security is very critical, Chair. The other countries, we know there's stability, it's a problem that needs to be taken seriously. And South Africa, for me, the fact that we do have that special, those special permits for Lesotho and Zimbabwe, it means we do have courage, we do have a political will. So, Chairperson, that was my comment. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mkhalipi.
Thank you, Chair. Bengiti, whip a committee. Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much. Thanks for the presentation as well, especially to Dr. Mtemi, because he was the first one to summarize the whole presentation. Because in my opinion, Chair, all presentations are speaking with one voice, and there's no one who is against actually about the aim of the presentation. First of all, Chair, I must put across that this agenda 2063 of AU resonates very well with the EFF politics. I support very much. I support it very much. I think it's very progressive. All right? But although I must also mention that Dr. Mtembu and all other presenters, and some doctors there, and the young doctor there, hey, he's full of doctors there. I'm not sure about St. John if he's a doctor yet. I must say that it reminds me of Nepad when I just listened to the presentation, especially the summarized one, because I haven't seen the really document. I just saw it here on the PECs, and I appreciate that at least as committee members, Chair, we will get an opportunity to go through, because it's very important to understand what is happening in the AU. And then I'm also very happy that the Chair of the International Relations is here as well. I know some of the issues are very close to his heart, because I was a member of that committee, Chair, although I'm no longer that member anymore. Aspiration number one. First of all, this I agree, Chair, if you just think back before this colonization took place, you remember very well, Chair, I've been also saying to this committee, Buti, these borders, in fact, were not meant for Africans. So we inherited these borders from colonization, and it does not help us. It's just that as Africans, we are lazy just to come with innovation, new innovations. Got again? Let me not be very negative. Let me just congratulate the AU on this one. As I'm saying, that is very progressive. I appreciate it very much. But having said that, Chair, I'm so skeptical. I think my presenters will also come with some solutions, because as I said, that it reminds me of the NEPAD document, because NEPAD document was talking about this thing. But NEPAD document was launched in 2001, and now it's 2017. It seems as if you are repeating only ideas, no implementation, nothing is African. So I'm very skeptical if I can be answered to that aspect. If we are going to move, it's a good plan. 2063 is very far. It's a very good move, but NEPAD document. If you can go back and revise the NEPAD document, you'll get some of the things that are said here in this document of 2063. My colleagues have also spoken about the timelines. For instance, I think it was 2016 in Rwanda when African states have launched this passport, African passport. So now we're in 2017 and it's expected to be in full implementation in 2018. I don't know, I haven't heard anything in regarding the progress in the regard, if it can be taken through, because it's a very progressive one. On aspiration number one, Dr. Mtem, very good. It's very good. There's nothing wrong. But come back to South Africa now. It's well known that in this ocean economy in South Africa, it's still remain untransformed here in South Africa. We send our kids to go and study maritime studies. We spend, it's very expensive. The Deputy Minister is speaking about mixed economy, saying the health and education is free. It has to be seen. Where is that education that is free in South Africa? I remember I have an adopted child that I sent to school to do the maritime studies. I think it was 2009-10. That time, Chair, I paid like 30,000. She didn't even get, to go to a doorstep of maritime. Even now, remain very untransformed. I think we must be also be seeing what is the mechanism that is going to be put in place, because it will remain just a pipe dream if there is no details regarding that one. I agree with the Deputy Minister as well on the, I think it's aspiration number two that talks about there's much time that are spent in borders. Too much time. So I think if they're zooming into that one, this is very good as well. And I don't know, Chair, on aspiration three, an Africa of good governance. Africa is riddled with corruption, left and right. We must not just talk for sake of talking. We must be in realistic, good governance in Africa. Oh my Lord. I'm still on floor, members, honorable members will get your chance to talk. And there is another aspiration that talks about, I can't see it here. I just want to comment Dr. Philani in passing that, good governance, democracy in Africa. Hey, one point in case is Zimbabwe. We'll see very soon the new president being Mrs. Mugabe. Is that democracy? Maybe you'll tell me that no, after the polls, people will go and vote for him. But with full understanding what is happening in Africa, a democracy, we are far from democracy. Even here in South Africa, by the way. But yeah, we'll see during December conference what will happen. And there's something, Dr. Pilani, that you spoke about, that you just said that the development in Africa is people's driven development. And it's not you, it's the document that you presented. In Africa, it's driven by people, the development. Maybe you are going to tell me which country where the development in Africa is driven by people. I don't know what is your role as people who are presenting here, if you have any role to go and play in the AU. Because till now we just received this presentation from you. You're not even the member of AU. Because if we can have get some time and interact with them as politicians, maybe it would be very better. Because now, Dr. Pilon will understand. Because we're here as members of parliament, you must be. And, I think it's all those things, Chair. Maybe if we're going to get a chance just to interact with those people who are members of the EU, because things that need to be zoom in and as challenges in South Africa, first of all, we must not shy away to say that in Africa we don't own any means of production. So some of the things won't be realized, even if you want to. Secondly, as some presentation was evaluating on the fact that, some countries are not even there. You were just mentioning 4 out of 15, I think it's only one region that is moving towards of these passport things. There's no political will. They just meet there at an AU level, take decision, going back to their countries, they don't implement even a single thing. Even the issue of land in Africa. We don't own any land in Africa. Starting here in my own country, the land is not owned by the rightful owners. So some of the things that you are suggesting here, it needs those kind of decisions. It needs those kind of leaders who are going to say, no, enough is enough. Let me take my country first. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Figlen.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Greetings to the presenters. Firstly, Chairperson, South Africa is very diverse. Now, when you talk about Africa for Africans, I don't know, I just need a clarity on that, because also the issue of language. We've got 11 languages in South Africa. There's three languages that I know they understand each other, like isiXhosa, isiZulu, and isiSwati. So, I mean, I can put it in one category as one language. So, for the sake of communication, I would like to get a clarity on that. The free movement, I think the Deputy Minister has covered me from my question. Now, the other worry that I have, we're talking about a peaceful and secure Africa. Now, why do we have migrations? It's not about economy sometimes. It's about the wars that are happening around Africa. And we know exactly why that is happening, because leadership wants to be there forever. Some of them, they said till Jesus come. So, no, I'm not talking about our president. I'm just making an example. Now, that free movement, as I say, South Africa is very diverse. Now, how do we deal with issue like that when we talk about Africa for Africans? If you see a white person, you see that person is African because he's from Africa. And then the issue of the language. As Africans, we should be able to choose one common language that everyone will understand. Now, if you talk about South Africans, most of the time we're speaking English. My mother tongue language, my first language is isiXhosa. So sometimes you want that person to understand the communication that I'm trying to bring in. So those are the issues that we have to look at. Now, the other issue is the issue of the security. Formalizing civil registration in SADC is stated as a major security challenge. Now, how do we deal with those challenges? To know exactly how many people are migrating to South Africa and why. Must also look at the issue of poverty beside the wars that are happening. I think South Africa has improved a lot. If you go to other African countries, you'll see the squalors that is happening there. Outstanding. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Raputi. Honorable Raputi.
Yeah, thank you very much for the presenters. You know, when this question comes, African integration and the African passport. Yes, Agenda 2063 with 7 aspirations. And sitting really trying to internalize and critique this Agenda 2063. Yes, our African leaders, they were very ambitious. You know, I think they were dreaming the Africa we want. It's a dream. It's a dream, and if you are dreaming, I think we should also ask ourselves, is this Africa peaceful? My young learned friend here, he was saying that as South Africans, we should not be too we should not really think much about security. I think a country where there is no security, there won't be development. My young learned lawyer, I think you really understand the most attributes of any development. It comes with peace and security. So we must be very mindful of that. With a lot of extremisms, there are a lot of extremists in 54 countries here in Africa. In Zambia alone, understand that there are 74 languages in Zambia. 74 languages in Zambia plus 11 in South Africa. How many? We are very diverse. And I think our African leaders who were dreaming, they never even think of the peace, the security, which is part of governance, as my friend Mam Khalipe have alluded. Where is governance? And we are really rushing to have that integration. Yes, we need integration, but what? Do we have systems in place? Are there any systems, processes in place to ensure that, number one, I want my security. I really don't know. How about you? I need my peace. That is the most important thing. Yes, we have to promote that free movement for the rights of residents. Well, that is the Abuja Treaty 1991. The rights of residents. The right of residence, where? In Africa or in the place where I stay. In all of that, in governance, we talk about accountability. I think my country must be able to account about who am I. And in order that we can be able to come with interventions in that given country. In that given country. But if ever we are just going to have free movement, and who are really perpetuating this kind of free movement? Is the people up there. I'm telling you that we go now, and we are going to say that we want all the borders to be open. I'm telling you, you know, we want those people who are saying the borders must be open. They must go there to the people. I mean, look at what has happened. I'm from Joburg. Just look what has happened there in Hillbrow. A whole a man of cloth who doesn't even want to obey just a simple kind of policy. Simple, you know, municipality law. Don't park here. Park here. A man of cloth not having peace. He's not peaceful inside and fight a policeman. So, yes, they were dreaming, but I think we must assist them in really making their dreams to be realized. So, I think all of us here, we've got PhDs, then all of us, we must be able to do some other PhDs. We need some PhDs in this kind of arena. It is so that we can be able to assist our leaders to make their dreams to be realized. It is still immature. Still immature. No proper governance. And I'm not for it. I'm sorry. I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kenya.
Thank you, Sir Person. Thank you for the presentations. I think I'll start also on this issue of free movement. I don't think really we are ready in South Africa.
if a Nigerians can beat policemen in our country. So those issues, that makes us not to be sure that are we really saying that we are the free movement. We are still busy with the BNA bill here because of the policies of the borders. As a result, even the drug trafficking, human trafficking, everything is happening. And most of the drugs are being caught there in those international airports, coming from where. So that's why we say, really, we don't think some of us that we are ready. Yes, we understand the issue of the colonial rules which made these borders. But at the same time, now, as Shakespeare says, the old order changes yielding place to new. Now we are having a problem. In spite of that, we are saying that those rules were colonial rules, but now we're having a problem. And everybody wants to come to South Africa. So what is going to happen? We can see even our children, some of us, are carrying drugs on their dreadlocks. What is that? So, and then we say that, yes, we know that we understand what we want, because we want a free and also a better Africa. We are really committed to that. But national interest comes first. National interest comes first. On Aspiration 6, that talks to Agenda 2016, they have to pass on this free movement now, because that's why we're frustrated, because we know what is happening in our country. Aspiration 6 of Agenda 2016 talks to people-driven. I think as Dr. Pilani Tebe, as we said, that people-driven, according to that, because I've got a passion with that aspiration that talks to women. Because when we're talking about people-driven, we're talking about unleashing the power of women, youth, and people with disabilities to drive this development agenda of Africa. Now, I have just that talks also to the promotion of issues of gender, youth, according to the principle of AU. Now, my worry is that, are there any indications on the increase of women migrants in South Africa and in South Africa? Maybe if you can assist us there, because I am really interested, because they are the drivers of this development. That is why we talk about people-driven on that aspiration. Again, also, as we talk about the principle of AU, fostering regional integration and development acceleration. Yes, we are ready for integration continent, but the fact of the matter, let us clean our house first, because charity begins at home. Also, looking at the problem that Africa continues to face serious conflicts and crises with devastating humanitarian and socio-economic consequences. Now, my question will be, how much influence does the AU have to facilitate implementation of this Agenda 2063? That is also my second question, because I have clapped all questions to this. Either Dr. Segere can answer that one will see, because at the end of the day, you have just consolidated your report as I hear it. Also, Dr. Yon, also, what is the most recent reliable data on the estimated extent of undocumented migrants in SADC? If you can also elaborate on that. Looking also at question again. Worried about also the security, I think it's Dr. Cassio Tode that talks to that. What can be done by the state to improve migration data collection? Because this question is also linked to security reasons, also by Dr. Yans. So that to be sure, because really, they are undocumented, you don't know where they are, and sometimes there is this issue that talks to those people who now are refused by their countries, and then they end up being integrated in our communities. Just to check the improvement of collection of that data. What do you think the state can do in that effect? Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you, Honorable Masango.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks very much to all the presenters. Well, in their presentations, in their presentations looking at Agenda 2063. The presenters, at least to me, seem not to have presented comparative studies or notes or practice for Africa to learn from with regard to the success stories of integration. I would imagine the European Union is about 40 years, and France and Germany were behind that integration at this at a level of political support and economic support. And it has happened at different levels, one of which is the intelligentsia of both countries and others, which is permanently hosted in Brussels. They are now known as the Eurocrats. So politicians come and go, governments come and go. Those are the guys who are a main anchor, economic, professional skills, etc., of the European Union. I wonder if any one of them has made some study, but we can advise that they look at that, how it has evolved over a period of time. And I would imagine that here some contacts or networks, Dr. Pilar Nemtembo, because his CV says that he studied in Germany. At the risk of not talking too much, and this European Union, notwithstanding many wars that have been fought between France and Germany, Germany and Britain, Britain and Germany over years, many years for that matter, but look at where they are, or Asia. So some studies like that, but I was then going to ask, because they need to look at that and then say to the leadership that they think from an economic stroke, political stroke, other conditions or requirements for integration. They think that to the extent that you have 1, 2, 3, this is conducive for integration. And 4, 5, 6, political leadership must attend to this, because it is not. And I think issues of security was one of them, civil strifes and bad governance. No, I think civil wars are just bad for economic consideration, because regional integration, because people don't leave their countries in search of other things. They live for security reasons. Or they're called job seekers or economic refugees. The other thing is whether they can make, because they may not be able to speak to that today, but they may, levels at which integration happens at a better, mutually beneficial levels. You see, if you look at this thing called, this phenomenon called xenophobia, it doesn't happen to people who are chartered accountants, engineers, doctors, that and that, based in the universities or anywhere else. Internationally, it doesn't happen. It happens with people who down there are seen to be taking the jobs of the locals. Uganda has the same problem. Tanzania has the same problem as ourselves when it comes to people fighting, protecting their jobs. So I don't know whether in Asia or in the EU, the levels of integration started where, whether it was exchange of skills. You may find that universities and other institutions actually
started all of these things, perhaps deliberately deploying people in this and that, country. You know, getting a group of engineers from Zimbabwe to help in South Africa. We get a group of doctors to help in Lesotho, Njalonjalo. And ultimately, you see that you needed each other, but you exchange skills according to your strengths. So, and then, of course, downwards, because people to people, yes, people to people, but it must be different levels. And then the other matter I thought I was going to... There are other issues that honorable members have spoken to. May have been raised with the presenters, but in fact, they are challenges of the leadership of the African continent. And the members of parliament of various parties, and even those who are not in the political parties, just scholars, but perhaps political parties, we've got to be hard on ourselves, on the weaknesses that we continue to exhibit as a leadership of the continent, and hope that we'll blame the white man. I could have said the white person. No, I'm just saying the white man. No, the white man. I'm using the colonial language very deliberately. So, you see, because in instances where this or that African state has been independent, as Obasanjo notes, for over 60 years, and others, like ourselves, 23 years, and others, 40 years, and the state of development is worse than during colonial times, and colonialism, whether by Belgium or by France or by Germany or by whoever, is receding into the distant past. One day you'll say, 100 years ago, were the colony of France or the colony of Britain. But we have nothing to show in terms of other things. I think Africans must just speak to themselves when it comes to things like that. It may not just be... It may be nice to blame it on apartheid or blame it on someone else, but we've got to grow up to these things. So these kind of challenges are not issues that must be presented to... We can alert you so that you write books, but the leadership, the African Union and other levels of leadership, we've got to talk about this. And sometimes when I speak about this thing, and I'm sorry to sound racial, I feel that I am better placed as an African and a black person to blame ourselves on our own sins. Like Obasanjo has raised issues, like Chika Onyeni has spoken about things. Because if it's a black, it's a white person, then you think they are being racist. But it doesn't make them less patriotic or less African because they are white. And it doesn't make me less African because I raise things. So it challenge you to any ilapo. And in case I'm not being understood, I'm just saying the issues of, we say there must be good governance and it is not there. There must be peace. There are pockets of peace that are not there, etc., etc. And as chair of international relations, I have come across instances where violence and wanted to use the word banditry, but these rebels, which is banditry anyway, these rebels are in fact sponsored by foreign countries. So you have here citizens of the African continent allowing themselves to be used against their own continent and their own people. And there will be no development. Because they participate in the elections, reject the elections. The following day, they have got everything they need. Uniform, training, military hardware, etc., etc. All they were waiting for was just to say, no, these elections are not free and fair. But they are externally sponsored because they are mercenaries for certain governments. So that's another challenge. The other challenge is that, which does not belong to you, is that regional leadership, that is the presidents and prime ministers, are not hard on a president or a prime minister or a leadership which is defaulting. It's not carrying out things that have been agreed to, either at the AU level or at a regional level. Some other time I was reading how ECOWAS was in fact carrying out decisions that they took, that a president within ECOWAS shall only stay there for 2 terms. And only Togo and the Gambia refused. And when the president of the Gambia, Yahya Jammeh, behaved the way he behaved, they intervened militarily. And the trouble you see in Togo, and that's my, I suspect, I have no facts, could be engineered by this government themselves, that the people must rebel. Because the father of the present government has been a president, same family, for 40 years, and then the son is the president for 12 years. And these are the only 2 countries that refused to accede to that resolution, that president stays for two terms, to address what you were talking about. So, in each of the regions, if there are agreements, resolutions, that we want things this way, and the one of us defaults, who must be hard on them? Who else will do so on our behalf? It troubles, even 200 years later, we'll remain slaves in our own land as Trump insulted us. The last one was the legal implications. I didn't hear you well whether Popo, yeah. I didn't hear you well whether you have looked at each of the governments within SADC or each of the governments within the AU, whether they have the kind of legislation that allows people to be brought in, and what happens to them in each of the countries, because the legal whatever of each of the countries may not be the same. If only you could say, for instance, in South Africa, you can come in, you get a work permit. What happens then what happens? Or if a person come from another country and don't have documents and gets married or not married, but they've got a relationship with a person of another country who's also undocumented, then it results in this thing called statelessness. They themselves are not documented. What must happen? What is the advice to the Department of Home Affairs? This child, only this child is a South African because he's born in South Africa. But the parents are unknown in quotes. The other one is from Lesotho, Zimbabwe. The other one is from Zambia. And you can't stop people from falling in love and deciding to have children. So what are the legal considerations there? Maybe the deputy minister knows. But the thing is, what can we learn from the others? Or what can we learn from from the EU? It can be an ongoing analysis and examination of things that can advise our leadership in the continent. And the last one, the issue of the refugees. Now, it may not be right to claim, and I'm not saying someone said so, to claim that refugees, in fact, want to permanently stay in the country where they are. They are refugees, but then to the extent that they are refugees, they will work there. They will. Life must continue. But they may want to go back home. So what should happen? Must they be housed? There must be a camp for the refugees where government assists them, provide security in the UN through the agency named Human Rights, Human Settlement or Human whatever. Assist them there. Now, what is the long term? What should be the long term consideration of a government about the people who are refugees, who first must have a status that they are the refugees in the country, political or whatever, and who may then want to go back home, and the conditions at home are still not conducive for them to go back home. What documents, what kind of documents should be given, things like that. I have not looked at what the United Nations is saying should happen to people like that, and how it assists where the receiver government is unable to deal with certain challenges. The last time I was looking at Uganda has received quite a number of, because of strife in the Rwanda, DRC, and Burundi. They ran there, and then it went to the United Nations and said, we're housing these people, but you know, we need medical provision, we need food, we need... So there is an intervention like that. And I must apologize, Chair, I really have been very long. You permitted this. I'm sorry about that.
It's normal, I'm sure. It's, you spoke for the 11 members of the International Relations. No, thanks, Kekan.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to... I felt that I must just come in. But I'm partly covered by my comrades. I will be short. You see, Chair, in reality, what has been presented here, starting from free movement and Agenda 2063, I think is misplaced. And if you listen to the masses of South Africa, it's rare to happen. In fact, I'm respecting to say that is a dream. That will never happen if one thing cannot be done. First, Chair, we need to analyze the African states. And secondly, I believe the legal person within these groups was supposed to say that any foundation of the house or of the state is a constitution. How can you think about free movement while the constitution of all these countries is not the same? What will happen if the rebels from another country come to South Africa and start to hijack Fidelity cash interest and whatsoever? What are you going to do with those people? How are you going to train them? All these things. They have never even looked at legalities of this free movement. They should first, we must first have one constitution as an African country. Because you need to deal with the law first. I know that each and every house has its own laws. We saw they spoke about the ill treatment that happens within our country by foreigners. How can we allow such people Can chair allow my child in your kitchen to trample over the table? Just be realistic. Just take it easy and check on this issue. What are you going to do? I'm addressing chair. I'm not saying that the chair. I'm addressing through the chair. So, but all of you, you must think about it. And you must, when I was deployed somewhere outside the country in Africa, we once debated this matter. You can see that I was not here when they were presenting, but I can tell you that I know everything about their presentation. And we agreed with those different countries that, in fact, this thing, the people who started this thing, unfortunately, we cannot say there's no suitable weight that I can use, because I don't want to insult my senior leaders, but there's no suitable weight that I can use. And then going forward, Chair, one constitution first was going to help us to have an operating laws. Like, for example, the Chair of International Relations just mentioned one thing. We've got South Africa that is run through democracy, where the president takes only two terms. Only two terms. Then you have your neighbor here, just closer to you, who wanted to die being a president. So, comrades, in whatever we are doing, we must be realistic. We must be realistic, and we must know exactly what we wanted to achieve. And after constitution of the whole Africa, the African Union must be given powers. You can't have an organization that is overseeing all these African states without powers. That is a big blunder. And you must go back and report that that is a big blunder. We must not sit somewhere, be comfortable in our offices and come with something that we know that is going to be rejected. That one, you can see. My constituency is Rosettenville in Johannesburg. For sure, all of you, you saw what happened the last 2 months. You saw what happened. And next time, it can't be xenophobia. It will be some of us, members of parliament, encouraging them to do what they are doing. I'm telling you, because of, if you are one person, you will never go against the masses. A good leader leads the masses and directs the masses. If people are saying that, look, these foreigners are here, none of a South African has never beaten a policeman, but a foreigner in my country will beat my law enforcement officer. Hi, come on. Come on. I will say that no. These people are not good neighbors. It's only South Africa and few countries that doesn't have rebels in their countries. And I wanted to agree and disagree with the international relations chairperson. You see, if you can get the story of what is happening in DRC and Uganda, there's no foreign forces there. They just came in now. Mostly those rebels and other forces are supported by African leaders. This head of state of Africa supporting that one to do this one, for him to get these resources. We know. And then after they will go to the podium and say, no, these are done by foreign forces. We know exactly what is happening. Is our, look, One example, how many African states signed for Muammar Gaddafi to be killed, including ours? So let us stop to pretend to be smart on these issues. We must be clear and know exactly what is happening and work on reality. Because otherwise I will say that because most of you are doctors, I will request your qualifications and check if they are here. Please. You see, it reminds me many things, and you can see that. And you can see that. Check. Let me tell you something. I once studied this, and chairperson of international relations. For example, in the communications portfolio committee, where the former chairperson of SABC was presenting something. They told me that this person has become a digs, but she cannot tell us about the issues of promises. Then we requested that normal this qualification to Garish Boka. And we found that it's true. You remember that it was in national television. I'm speaking because of these issues is the one that kills Africans. We are in trouble because of this. So the last one, Che. Let us, as Africa, I still have a dream of African state after constitution and operating laws to have one combating crime institution that will assist us. Well, if we can talk about that, doctors, we are going far. But this one, I'm telling you, we'll all gone here. Thanks very much.
On that score, Honorable Gumede.
No, Chair, on a point of order. I just feel that our learned presenters there should accept that it was just the slip of a tongue in an attempt to make his views honorable Gagan. The CVs, the academic CVs of the presenters have been read. The one that he is referring to, because others may not know about that, is a real story that there was someone who claimed to have certain qualifications. She didn't have those qualifications. But that does not link for challenges like that where people claim qualifications which they don't have, has got nothing to do with those who are presenting today. So I request that they just accept that they are not being invited by parliament and being kind of doubted or insulted that they in fact don't have these qualifications. I just wanted to say that just for their own comfort. Thank you, Chair.
No. Thanks, Honorable Masango. I think the one that we have invited, they are renowned academics. And it is not the first time that they've been engaging on the issues that they are engaging. I think they've been doing it for quite a number of years. And some of them, I think they are participating in renowned institutions. And others have published journals and all that in this subject. And so probably, I think, like as you're saying, is that when you are making a point, then you may need all sorts of resources to make your point clear. But some of the steps then may be on a slippery. And I think that is it's accepted. I think they are in comfort. And as long as, they are sure of their qualifications, doesn't matter whoever says what. And then, Honorable Gumede, proceed.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Fortunately, this is not SABC in front of us, Mr. Kikar. So don't worry. We know them. We discussed thoroughly before we had the presenters. their credentials are clear to us. We made references before we called them. So rest assured, my comrade. But secondly, let me just apologize profusely for us and part of the team that comes from Acacia Park. We had problems from our side of town. There must have been an accident, so we couldn't arrive on time. It's not because perhaps we are disrespectful, Chairperson, or perhaps because we are disrespectful to you, esteemed guests of ours. And then, having said that, first let me say up front, Kwame Nkrumah's dream has to be fulfilled. I think we agree on that. We agree on ultimately having an Africa that is one. But when Kwame Nkrumah died, he did not have the same experiences that we are having in 2017. I think we agree on that. And those same experiences we have in 2017 make us to examine and examine thoroughly all proposals, saying that we have to be one. We agree to it in principle, but the problem is in detail. For instance, there is no stress or emphasis on founding principles and or to which participants have to abide before perhaps they can be looked at as part of this common governance. So, for lack of a better way. So, I think, firstly, we've got to adopt certain founding principles and show that we are prepared to abide by them. The second area is the area of institutions. I did not see much in the line of institutions in the document. Institutions like the central bank. What do we think of a central bank for Africa? The currency, perhaps those types of things. The judiciary, the financial institutions, the framework for development and so forth. These institutions that are responsible for those. So I think there we've got to look into before really we start having these time frames, because time frames should be as a result of what you have done and what is outstanding. And then if you have not just done anything and then you start having time frames, then that becomes suspect. Another aspect we've got to look at is national interest, security, and if we are a democracy, we've got to be worried about our mandate, because you'll talk about AU protocol, meetings, and as you campaign, and then the next thing you're out of government, because you do not have a mandate. If you have free and fair elections, you go to elections, you lose. You don't lose because of your policy, but you lose because you did not allow for dialogue, for interaction between leadership and constituencies. For instance, let me just make an example. Free movement of highly skilled people is not a problem to anyone, as it has been said before. But free movement of unskilled people into a jobless situation like South Africa, our unemployment is estimated at what right now? Is it 27? Yeah, it is estimated at 27, and then our youth is bearing the brunt of that. So if we are not careful, what we are going to have is that we are going to absorb people, they are going to compete with our youth. As we have had, there are a lot of complaints around restaurants, hotels, and so forth, that we are indiscriminate, we are excluding our people, and so forth. So dialogue is very, very important, and then getting a mandate, and then to then have the shape of migration that we want to have. And that also affects the structure, the form of Africa we want. Are we looking ultimately at the federation? Are we looking at the confederation? Are we looking at a united Africa? And then if so, what informs it? Because it has got to be informed by something. It could be a very, very loose confederation. And then perhaps, but if now we are not, we open our borders, then we find that now we get terrorists, we get criminals, we get human traffickers and so forth, hiding behind refugees, hiding behind genuine asylum seekers, then we have a problem. It's good, but not now. It could be in some time later. Because if we open borders as of tomorrow, the party that propagates that, I'm sure, is not going to win elections in Africa, in South Africa, if our elections are free and fair. If you go around and say, open the borders, people, when people look at Hebrew, buildings have been hijacked by foreign nationals. In Point Road, buildings have been hijacked by foreign nationals, and South Africans cannot walk into those areas. They are not free to walk in those areas. They are attacked. Our police being beaten up in front of us, in front of us, in our eyes. We've never beaten up policemen in South Africa. And that is the abuse of our constitution. So if people beat up policemen and we are doing nothing about that, it means that we are failing to manage this constitution. This constitution, it means it is misplaced. And yet everyone in the world is saying it's the best constitution. Best because your police can be beaten up in daylight and nothing happens? Oh no. That is not the freedom we fought for. So, in as much as we would like to have to see a situation where there is progress, the AU protocol, I think, is premature. And people that are looking for this AU protocol have got to do it in their country first. But now the problem is there are countries with push factors and countries with pull factors. One will not have a problem, say for instance, having an integration with Botswana, Namibia, and those type of things. This thing can work clearly there. But now if you go now to other countries with push factors, those people are going to come here, and then some of them are militarily trained. Last month we got the reports in Gauteng, senior police officers saying that out of 10 heists, you find that they are former soldiers of other countries involved as part of a syndicate. Out of 7 murders in Johannesburg and Pretoria, 7 are committed by foreign nationals. And you say we've got to open our borders in that instance. You say that we are over conscious about security. We are worried. We are worried. We want to protect everyone in South Africa, but we cannot. And then if we come with these progressive and liberal positions, let us also provide for security. Let us also provide for other things. In the AU document, I saw that we had by a certain year, holes should be banished. I don't know whether you saw that the holes should be banished. But we do not have land. How can we start with tractors? We do not have money. How can we start with tractors? So it's those things that we've got to look into first and discuss, and then in discussions, I think then we can refine a document and move towards 2063 or agenda or later. It's a good listing proposal. It's a good dream, but managerially we did not look at the microeconomic picture. As is it doable? Do we have the management to do it? Do we have the money? Who pays the tax? Because in some other countries, the tax collection ratio is about what? 90%. So now it's all those things that you cannot just agree to without looking at the founding principles and saying and assessing whether they are abided by or not. Otherwise, we are just going to have people we cannot protect in South Africa, and we are going to have a revolt, and then we are going to blame the West, but forget that we initiated the problem. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Now, thank you, Honorable Members. It is interesting, the debate that you have had, and the questions, I think, that have been raised, and I'm sure our panelists have been jotting down, even though that there were no direct questions leveled against a specific invitee. But I think all what we agree of is that South Africa welcomes foreign nationals in the country, and we are not having problems of being visited by foreign nationals for whatever reasons, except that they should come through the proper channels and document themselves. I think we do that. And again, South Africa is not an island in the middle of the sea. And then we are connected to all other African countries and countries of the world. That is, globalization has got an impact on us. And then we have to interact with the rest of the other countries. And then also, of course, is that a revolution sometimes doesn't need a timetable. A revolution that is executed according to a timetable, it will never materialize. A revolution is abrupt. It actually defeats plans, actually, a revolution. And therefore, we should appreciate the fact that if there are serious changes that needs to happen in Africa, and then there will be quite a good number of uncomfortable steps that are taken, and they will rock those that are highly conscious about programmed activities. And of course, but we should know that if you are in some of the hot countries in the night, if you open the window for fresh air to come in, then even mosquitoes will find their way through that opening. And therefore, it will be the end of your peace in that house. So thank you very much. And can I start right from this side, and then let's see whether we can we can do with about 7 minutes each, and then make just comments and, if you can proceed in that order.
Thank you very much, honorable member of the parliament, for all your very good questions. I will respond to a few of them that was addressed. The first one is about, I talked about we need to shift from border control to border management. But let me be clear, border control is essential, first, because we have a lot of African states who do not control their whole territory. That is an issue today. That's why we talk about this ungoverned space. But when I talk about shifting to border control, border management is an evolution of this border control. Because if you only have a coercive management of border, meaning military forces forcing the population, being negatively perceived by the population, this is a problem. When you look at what's happened, for example, now in Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso, in these border areas, some of these extremist movements have popularity because they are perceived more effective and more fair than the security forces. I have a colleague who did the research in central Mali, and population said to him that we don't like the police because the police is corrupted. So that's why I insist about the fact that we need sometimes to move from this border control, which is the control of the territory through military means, to governance, which means about institution building. And there was the question of the Honorable Chair of the Committee of International Relations regarding the benchmark with the EU. It's true that we could have at the EU level a lot to learn from what the EU have been doing over the last 50 years. But we also have to say that, first of all, the EU began at 6. The African Union, the OAU, we began at least in 1964 at already 25. And we are 55 today. How do you build a real consensus among 55 people? Even in families, it doesn't happen. So right now, the EU is just the consensus among the different tendency trends that you have within the organization. And you also have the fact that what's made the EU work is the fact that you really have a push for real delegation at the level of the EU Commission. But at the level of the EU Commission so far, let me just quote the statute of the Commission regarding the power of the chairperson. The first competence of the chairperson of the Commission is to chair the meeting by the Commission. It's not about drafting policies. It's about chairing the meetings. So, at the end, the power that the EU Commission has is the power that head of state want to give them. And so far, maybe in some parts of Africa, South Africa, maybe Nigeria, you have a willingness to give more power to the chair of the Commission. But in other parts of Africa, you have a real reluctance to give any kind of real power, like checking, for example, what the gentleman was talking about regarding crime, giving more powers to the Commission. You have a lot of reluctance from many member states. And regarding the issue of the founding principle, let's just recall that we have the EU Constitutive Act, which was adopted in 2001 and signed by all the EU member states. But it's all about implementing this act. As my colleague was saying, in Africa we are very good in grand policy designing, but we are less good when it comes to implementing it. And this is the typical example. We have the EU Constitutive Act is quite progressive when you compare it to the EU Charter. But once again, it's about implementation by the principals, the principal being the head of state. And it's at this level that some progress need to be made. Thank you very much.
Thank you, may follow.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for your comments. I agree 100% with all the sentiments that you have expressed. And I think 50% of my presentation actually raised some of the issues about the fact that it would be wrong for us to think that movement of people only has benefits. We have very strong challenges as well. One of them being the facilitation of cross-border crime. People can move over freely. If our law enforcement agencies are not strong in working together across borders, we'll face some very strong negative externalities of movement of people. The other issue is this. As the Deputy Minister of Home Affairs raised, I think what we need to first of all look at, we need to stagger implementation. the realities in each regional economic community is different. We have different realities in our neighborhoods and backyards, which means that we can't all run at a very fast pace as the EU is moving right now, pushing under the carpet very serious concerns in different RECs. We need to take into consideration what our challenges are in each REC and make sure that those challenges are provided for or addressed. So probably we need to stagger implementation by aiming at facilitating movement. Instead of free movement, let's rather facilitate movement on the continent. We can start with visa on arrival. We can start with waiving visas for countries that we are sure we can waive visas for, and see how that moves on for starters and how that develops over time. And then as we move on, we begin to make the necessary additions or subtractions towards a fully blown integration of movement of people on the continent. Thank you.
You may follow, Sergio.
Thank you for your questions. I also have a couple of points that I would like to make. The first point is that I think it's important to try and make a change in the current narrative about migration, because we often perceive migration as a result of a failure. And then we think about refugees, asylum seekers, those who are fleeing from war, or in the case of economic migrants, those who are escaping poverty. But I think migration is more than that. And that's why when we refer to the move of people, instead of calling it migration, we talk about mobility. Because beside these two categories, we also have other groups. We've got students, we've got business people, highly skilled people. So the landscape, it's much broader than that. So I would really like to invite you to try and go beyond these two categories. The second is about, I have a perception that a lot of people think that free movement, it means open borders. It's not exactly like that. And here I think it's important to differentiate between what is it, the facilitation of movement, and what is free movement. The facilitation of movement means acknowledging the fact that there are different categories of migrants, different groups. As was mentioned earlier, there are highly skilled individuals, there are semi-skilled, unskilled. So a comprehensive migration policy needs to include all these different groups and have provisions that can cater for all these groups. And I think that if we look at the white paper, there are certainly some very positive and good provisions with regards to the movement of not only highly skilled people, but also semi-skilled and unskilled people. And yes, I do believe this is a very brave and courageous idea, because if we look at other countries and the migration policies that are drafted in Europe and in other continents, we see that yes, they are very liberal towards highly skilled people, but very restrictive towards unskilled and semi-skilled. So the fact that the white paper is actually introducing new forms of visa, I think it's something that needs to be supported and needs to be encouraged. So the free movement at this stage is really about the right to entry. So the giving the possibility to Africans to come and visit any African country and stay for 90 days. It doesn't mean an open border policy at this stage. It's really about the right to entry. I do also agree that things have to be done progressively and cannot be rushed. So I was a little bit surprised when I became aware of the EU protocol for the free movement, knowing that there is already a SADC protocol for the facilitation of movement, which has been signed, but is not enforced yet. And the last comment is about harmonization. It's impossible to have integration if there's no harmonization. And that's why there has to be a certain level of harmonization, and perhaps it would be advisable to start first with the regional integration and then to move to something something bigger. But things have to be done step by step, because at the moment it's a matter of fact in many different fields there's no harmonization between different countries. And then the last comment is about the fact that my impression is also that at the AU level there is no clarity of what is actually the African agenda for migration, or at least this is not fully perceived by the EU. So we know pretty well what is the EU agenda with regards to migration, in particular migration from the African continent, but to me it's not clear what are the priorities of Africa and what are the needs of Africa when it gets to migration governance. Thank you.
Thank you. I would have loved to jump Philani to go to Bobo, because Philani is just going to tell us what the AU Vision 2063 it says. He's going to comment on that. At least the others are giving their views. Proceed, Bobo, and then Philani close.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think what's pertinent is that I deal with the issue around security. I think to a large extent my comments around South Africa's infatuation with security where migration is concerned was maybe misinterpreted by members of the committee. It was not to say that security should not be a consideration, that security is not important. But my hesitance and my fear hearing some of the comments from the committee members is that the level to which security has been elevated, I think, has no basis in the data. A number of examples have been used that if we allow people to come, they're going to commit crimes, they're already committing crimes. But I respectfully, those claims or assertions have no basis in the actual data. If you look at the crime stats that have been recently released, the majority of crimes in South Africa are not committed by foreign nationals. They're committed by South African citizens. You're most likely to be killed in this country by another South African citizen than you are likely to be killed by a foreign national. But what happens in the discourse around migration is that them being seen initially not as a benefit but as a threat is a very useful political tool. If you look at America, I like to use an example. Trump's administration has been around, keep out the migrants, keep out the Muslims because they are terrorists. But if you look at the stats, if you look at the numbers, I can't deal with assumptions. I look at stats. I look at the raw data. Between 2005 and 2015 in America, if you look at that period when they looked at the number of deaths, violent deaths, 94 deaths between 2005 and 2015 were as a result of terrorists. Over 301 deaths were a result of gun violence in America. So the issue in America is not around terrorism. It's around gun control, right? But to say it's the foreigners, it's the Muslims, is an easy, soft political target because migrants are faceless, right? They don't have a political constituency. So to constantly label the issues around security and around violence as being a migrant problem is the popular myth. It's a popular rhetoric. If you, I challenge each of the members of this honorable committee to go look at the crime stats. They'll tell you a very different picture. And it's impossible for migrants to be the majority of the perpetrators of crime in this country because they form less than 5% of our population. So we're not being overrun by migrants. We're not at risk of being killed by migrants. That is merely a myth that does not find its basis in any of the data. The data doesn't show that South Africa is a terrorist hub. There hasn't been a terrorist attack on South African soil, as far as I've been able to ascertain. And just because we allow a more relaxed approach to migration that allows a better facilitation of movement isn't necessarily going to then result in increased crime or increased terrorist attacks. Because if we look at our borders are already very porous. If terrorists wanted to come to South Africa, they'd be here already. If the abundance of migrants that you think are criminals wanted to come to South Africa, they would come here already because our borders are already porous. So at every opportunity that I can try and dispel this myth around that has been perpetuated around fearing the migrant. The migrant should not be feared. They're not a reason why South Africa's crime is so high. You're more likely to be killed by a South African citizen than you are to be killed by a migrant.
Thank you very much, Milan.
Thank you, Chair. I think mine is just to do a wrap up essentially. At least on issues that are more on the continental level, I'll maybe weigh in on just some of the comments. But I mean, it's clear that you know someone, for instance, said, "What is the capacity of the African Union to actually implement you know Agenda 2063?" And the reality is that well, the recent budget of the African Union, 75% of it was actually financed by donors. 75% of the budget of the African Union is coming from outside. The majority of that is coming from Europe. That's a reality. Now, we talk about capacity to implement. Okay, we start, where does the money come from? Who funds this institution? And the reality is there's very little capacity. That's one of the issues that the Kagame report looks at, about institutional reform. If you look at the AU Commission, about 90% of that budget is actually coming from donors. And if we look what's happened to the AU budget from 2013 to 2017, in 2013, it was 50% donor-funded. The next year, it went up to 60. Next year, to 63%. So the portion of the budget of the African Union that's coming from donors is actually been increasing. It's going in the wrong direction. And that, you know, plays very well with what Honorable Masango was saying, in a sense of Africans taking responsibility. For their dreams, but also, you know, when waking up in how you want to implement, you know, those particular dreams. We know we have, you know, we know we have the resources on the continent. I mean, you know, people often think of Africa as a net recipient of foreign aid or foreign direct investment. And that goes into some of the issues of governance. The reality is that Africa is a net exporter of finance. So there's more money leaving the continent than money coming into the continent. That means we are actually financing the development of other countries. Very good statistic that numbers that were shown in the presentations earlier about how we are actually providing jobs to 800,000 people in the processing of our diamonds and so forth, and only providing 8,000, you know, for ourselves. These are things that are sometimes looked at as though they are beyond our control. But I think it's clear that we are as a continent sometimes, you know, too soft on each other. And these are also some of the comments that were made by Honorable Masango, that leaders are not strict enough on one another. We have protocols. So the Kagame report, also on institutional reform, it points to there's been 1,500 agreements at the AU level. But there's no capacity to monitor all of these agreements. So 1,500 agreements at the heads of state level. But who's monitoring those agreements? Who's monitoring whether we're implementing those agreements or not? And what happens when we don't implement those agreements? This is some of the weaknesses in terms of the implementation of these dreams, you know, that we might have. And it weighs in very well with another element that the chairperson of the IR committee was saying about comparing, you know, processes in Africa with what's happened in other parts of the world. We know that when the EU started its own process, it was very restricted. It was about integrating in terms of coal and steel. That was it. Very simple. Just coal and steel. Not political level, not movement of people, not common currency, not peace and security, all of those things. It was simply about coal and steel. And the idea behind that was, you know, to prevent another war. If the Germans could control their own coal and steel again, they could maybe reproduce the war machinery as they did previously. So what do you do? Take it away from that important resource, away from the nation state, and regionalize it. And progressively, they expanded. And also in incorporating members, I think what's important in the EU is that the strict criteria to becoming a member of the EU. So you don't just get into the EU. There's a whole process of becoming a member of the EU, and they have to comply to certain standards and so forth. And that's how they keep a certain level of control. We are all members of the African Union already. So how do you expel countries that are not complying to AU protocols? You can't really expel them. They are already members of the AU. Maybe, you know, moving forward, when we talk about integration, is to think about introducing strict criteria for enhanced integration. So you might have that all members are members of the African Union. But when we move up levels of integration, you know, it might be a case of saying we're not all going up together, but, you know, look, for instance, in Southern Africa, you've got the Southern African Customs Union. So the SACU already is already fairly integrated. Now, if you want to expand that integration, maybe you bring in other countries, but you need strict criteria. Some of those criteria could be in the form of the African peer review mechanism, you know. But, you know, the point is that we need to basically take responsibility for our successes and for our failure. We need to ask ourselves very hard questions. We need to be very clear and critical of this agenda. Some members have been critical of the Agenda 2063. And the point here is not, you know, to be critical for the sake of being critical, but to be critical for the sake of moving this long-held agenda for African unity forward. But it means that really, when agreements are signed at a member state level, there needs to be very clear mechanisms to incentivize countries to actually implement some of these protocols. You know, otherwise we'll be sitting in 2063 and saying we've designed now an Agenda 2100. So you know, these are just the type of realities that face our continent in terms of actually implementing this Agenda 2063. We have the resources, we have the people, we know that 2050 we're going to double in population. We know that likelihood in 2100 you might have 40% of the world's population actually being African. So these are the demographic realities, you know, but in order to get there, we need to get much better at implementing. It also will affect how the relations between countries, because if we get harder on ourselves, then it means that, you know, a case that was mentioned was, like, for instance, Zimbabwe. If we get harder on ourselves, then it means the region might sanction, for instance, you know, much more harder and come out more stronger against countries that are actually not in line with the regional protocols. That will have an impact on relations amongst countries. But I think if we want to go, you know, to where this Agenda 2063 envisions we go, then these are some of the decisions that, you know, will obviously have to play out. And I think these are important questions for this committee, but also, you know, but for both committees, also for international relations. So I think let me leave it there.
Yeah, thank you very much for the comments. And Deputy Minister, you said you wanted to make a comment.
I think, Chairperson, at this stage, just to thank the presenters. I mean, I do think that each of the presentations gave us rich material, and a lot of the discussion was obviously precipitated by what was presented to us. So thank you very much. I do think that I agree with much that has been said. Certainly, the phased approach is very critical. I think when you want to do something and you want to do something well, you plan. You plan your implementation, you understand the consequences, you mitigate some of the challenges. That's really, I think, what people are saying. Don't go into it as a panacea for all ills, because that's not going to materialize. There is no magic wand for our challenges on the continent, in our country as well. And then also, let's work towards it. I think that's the issue. If we are genuinely committed to realizing the aspirations, then I think it can't just be that we put our eggs in one basket and speak free movement without looking at the other aspirations in just as much enthusiasm. The issue of good governance, the issue of development, very, very important. But I don't see the same enthusiasm being generated for some of those very, very important issues. For me, integration is not just about free movement. It's about a whole range of things. The range of things basically are captured in some of the aspirations, because you can't have a developed continent without good governance. You can't have a free and peaceful continent without democracy. And so those discussions must dovetail together. And from our perspective, we certainly will do what we need to do in the short term with regard to our regional integration processes and policies, understanding that there are huge diversities, there are huge challenges there as well. And while I think as South Africa we've made, and certainly SADC, we've made a lot of progress, we stand to be dealing a lot more, I think, and perhaps we need to put a lot more emphasis on dealing with some of the challenges, including the challenges of the National Population Register in all of our countries, because that's going to be key to enabling us to actually facilitate movement more freely. And in this regard, we've certainly been, and I know Jackie has been also part of these discussions, particularly with a country like Lesotho, where clearly we have to find solutions that better enable free movement there because of geographic and other issues. So we certainly are committed. But it doesn't also help, Chair, that in this process, as we start talking about these issues, which will require a lot of investment, border management will require a lot of resources, that we also realize that the economy plays a role in this regard. It doesn't just impact. You can't just say, well, free movement will enhance your economic fortunes, but also understand that your economic fortunes also enhances free movement. So there's that symbiotic relationship, I think, that we don't often think about as well. So these are just some of my comments. I very much welcome further discussions and further seminars, Chair, as we proceed. But I think this has been a very, very useful initiative by the Portfolio Committee. I really want to urge that we should speak more about these things, because I think we spend too much of time being a very closed session as opposed to having these types of rich engagements. And then perhaps if we could just get people's presentations, that would be very, very useful, and contact details for further engagement. Thank you very much.
No, it's, thank you very much. Honorable members, I think you may have been agitated, but I just wanted to say that this is deliberate. We have called people to tell us what we want to hear and what we don't want to hear. That's the guest that we have invited. We wanted to make sure that we have got a debate. Unless if we have got people that say it's only what you want to hear, then there will never be a debate. Therefore, I think it's our mind now has been agitated, and then we should be able to debate in our minds among ourselves, moving forward, as the Deputy Minister is indicating. Possibly we should continue and debate these issues that we have raised. Because, of course, I think this is all either recorded or it was broadcast live. And then people out there also probably, they may have started the debate that we have started here. And I think we must appreciate that only when people are debating is then that they will reach conclusions of resolving some of the problems that they are having. And what we have picked up, honorable members, is that there are many groups among our people in the country, in the continent, in the world, that actually seek to travel across other countries. Whether it be students, business people, just tourists, asylum seekers, you name all of them. They need a regime that facilitates their movement across these countries. And we are talking about documented people. I think I must just qualify that we are not talking about people that just sneak through between Lesotho and South Africa, through the mountains. We're not talking about those ones. We're talking about people that are documented. And also, of course, is that the countries we are speaking about in Africa, they've got different levels of economic development, which has impact on what goes on there, as well as the flows of people in and out of those countries. And then we are hearing that we should be speaking about facilitation of movement rather than free movement. That's what we have heard that has come out. And then also, of course, is that what happens on our borders then should be governed properly to facilitate those movements, not control of closing people out or forcefully barring people from entering the countries. So of course, if you do that, people will find another way of getting in, and which may not be nice. And then, of course, is that we must deal with issues of security. And then the implementation of the integration, then it should be done in a staggered manner or a phased manner to accommodate some of the other issues that still needs to be attended to. That's what we have heard. And of course is that there is a call that we must deal with issues of leadership within Africa, and then taking into consideration some accountabilities on acting on behalf of citizens of countries. And then also we must deal with, there must be an attention to the institutional arrangement of the AU, whether it is in terms of governance, finance, and security arrangements, and its powers as well. That's what has been indicated. Of course, is that we must take note that there are hotspots in the whole of Africa, where you have got civil wars that are happening, and of course, it's the deputy minister and some of the members have actually raised the matter. These countries in the continent needs to attend to the issue of registering their citizens. No citizen that must just wobble around or in between countries without any proof where he or she belongs. Therefore, if only these population registers are done, therefore every country should be able to account to any person together with their citizens that is within their boundaries, unlike the situation that we have now. I think these are some of the things that have been highlighted and raised, and that needs to be attended to as we debate this AU Vision 2063. Honorable members, this seminar was supposed next week on Tuesday to be followed by responses from the Department of Home Affairs. How are they actually getting through towards 2063? And as well as the Department of International Relations, how are they actually leading Home Affairs towards Agenda 2063? We're supposed to have those responses from these two organs of state. But now we have received information that the Refugees Amendment Bill has been passed in the NCOP last week, but with amendments, which means is that we need to attend to it, and then if possible, we can get it through before we arrive. And also the challenge that next week there is the plenary that has been planned as from 10 o'clock in the morning. Therefore, we can only have about an hour if we start at 9 o'clock. And then we want to propose that next week we postpone.